I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. The COVID-19 pandemic has upended just about every facet of life in every nation in the world. Lockdowns, social distancing, and mask wearing became commonplace in 2020, but 2021 brought a glimmer of hope. Vaccines developed in record time by Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca offered a path toward putting this scourge of a virus behind us. But the rollout of these miracle vaccines has suffered its fair share of bumps in the road. U.S. health officials just cleared Johnson & Johnson vaccines to resume distribution. That's after they were halted for causing extremely rare blood clots in some women. AstraZeneca still has not received approval for their drug in the United States, and a terrifying surge in cases in India has some questioning whether access and availability to these vaccines is as fair and equal as it should be. For more, we're talking with Annalisa Morelli. She is a healthcare reporter for Quartz. She's been covering the pandemic and the economic effects of the vaccine rollout. She's also been reporting on the current crisis in India. We'll be talking about the amazing achievements of the vaccine makers, the perils and promise of this stage of the pandemic, and how previously anonymous drug companies like Moderna and BioNTech have become household names. All that's coming up next.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. Annalisa Morelli, welcome to Business Wars.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just 1 year prior to us recording this interview, I recall we were in the thick of the first lockdown, and I think all of us have that moment, you know, that we remember. And a vaccine at the time was talked about almost like a fairy tale, right? But now we have three approved here in the U.S. Can you put into context for our listeners just how difficult that really was to pull off? Because I'm not sure everyone fully realizes what a stupendous feat this was in medical terms.
Yeah, so about a year ago, I would say the most optimistic estimates were that it was going to take a year and a half. And anyone would say, you know, any sort of prediction that the vaccine might be available before the end of 2020 were sort of dismissed as wishful thinking almost. And that is because even a year and a half would have been a great acceleration over the regular timeline of vaccine, which is at least, and has been so far, at least like, you know, 4 or 5 years of work. And, you know, we have vaccines that have taken decades to develop. So really the fact that it took less than a year, it's absolutely, not only is unheard of, but it's a, you know, it's a stunning feat. And I think there's two things to sort of be thankful for when it comes to that. So one is, you know, the fact that at least the first two vaccines to be approved in the U.S. and to be ready to, you know, for deployment, which were Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, both use mRNA technology, which makes it much faster to have vaccine candidates. And, you know, and there, you know, in that situation, then we got a little bit lucky in that, you know, the coronavirus, like you know, COVID-19 virus didn't really mutate very much. And like even the variants, you know, by and large so far have been covered by the vaccine. So we were lucky that then the trials kind of proved effective and we were, you know, able to start inoculating people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the other thing that was really unprecedented is the kind of international cooperation that went into it when it comes to the scientific community, you know, and kind of building onto one another's progress also, you know, saved us sometimes. And you know, I don't foresee that this is something that we will see again in the near future. And hopefully there won't be, you know, similar need in the same way.
You know, that's a very interesting point that you make about whether or not we'll see more of this in the future, because this was sort of groundbreaking on so many levels. But I want to get to something that you were saying a little bit earlier about mRNA. And one of the more fascinating parts of this story is just how close drug companies came, or researchers for that matter, to abandoning mRNA as an approach, right? I mean, it took a global pandemic, in a sense, to make this technology viable. Am I right?
There hadn't been the big investment that you would imagine for something that is so groundbreaking and with such potential. And now, because of all the money that went into the development of this specific vaccine, we sort of have, now we know it works. And we're coming out of this very tragic year and a half with a really like a new tool in the arsenal of medicine, really, that can be applied to a lot of things.
Yeah, it's interesting because the technology appeared to be there, the theory and the research appeared to be there, but there wasn't a drug that was built around this principle, this mRNA approach. And now here we have a life-saving vaccine. But I want to shift for a moment because mRNA and Moderna have been closely affiliated, but I want to focus on Pfizer for just a minute. You know, they're selling billions of dollars worth of vaccines. The company's expecting huge profits to roll in this year. Pfizer's an old company. They've been around for what, more than 150 years. Can you say something more about what set Pfizer's success apart from some of the competitors?
Well, they partner with BioNTech, so they just sort of like combined the size and the you know, manufacturing opportunity of an old established pharmaceutical company with a biotechnology company that worked on mRNA, and then that partnership, you know, just was really successful and allowed them to, you know, produce vaccines at mass.
Yeah. You know, they weren't the only partners, of course. AstraZeneca worked with Oxford University on development and production. You had Johnson & Johnson joining up with pharmaceutical company Merck to boost production. It seems like that J&J Merck partnership took a little extra effort to get off the ground. The federal government had to retrofit one of Merck's facilities in North Carolina, which hadn't been inspected since 2018. And of course, there have been those stories about Johnson & Johnson's hiccups along the way. Why do you think Johnson & Johnson still saw the collaboration, even though they were sort of they were playing catch up? They were in catch up mode, in a sense, for a long time. Why do you think they still saw this collaboration as a lucrative deal? And did any of that contribute to the manufacturing error that caused them to have to trash something like 15 million doses? I'm talking about this partnership here with Merck.
Well, I think a couple of things. I think the partnership between J&J and Merck is different from the others that you have mentioned, because the other partnerships have, you know, are two different kind of institutions, right? So you'd have BioNTech, it's a biotechnology company partnering with Pfizer, which is an old pharmaceutical company. J&J and Merck, right, they're both pharmaceutical companies, and I think there's many reasons why it was worth going, you know, going forward. One is definitely there was a need, and it's a different technology that is, for instance, easier to transport. It doesn't require the kind of cold storage that Pfizer and Moderna require. It can be better transported to people's homes, for instance, and it can be better transported, you know, eventually to countries that don't have the, you know,
right,
kind of cold and the freezers that we can have in some of these countries. So there was a need for that kind of a vaccine.
Sure.
I would say the second reason to do it is that there's still,
you know, this still a slice of the market that's there. So this is a vaccine that's potentially, going to be needed by the entire global population. So that's, 8 billion people, I think, at this point, getting the vaccine now, potentially getting in the coming years. And I think the third aspect of this, which, is very important, in my opinion, specifically for J&J, is that the Johnson & Johnson comes out of a few years in which it was primarily associated with the opioid crisis in the U.S.
Right.
So this is not a company that's enjoying a lot of goodwill or was enjoying a lot of goodwill, in the country. And then, all of a sudden you have a chance of doing something incredibly, helpful and be associated with that. So right now, if you hear Johnson & Johnson, the first thought is, goes to the vaccine. It doesn't go to any other stuff. And that's also something that they have done in terms of, trying to capitalize on this goodwill pretty well. The vaccine far is distributed at a not-for-profit model, so they're not planning to make a profit from it.
Going back to the issue of manufacturing errors, for example, and of course there's been special concern on the possibility that there may be a relationship between this extremely rare blood clot that has been reported by some who've received the J&J vaccination, and of course the loss of millions of doses. Is there any issue when it comes to partnerships, especially when it comes to vaccines, something that is so critical in terms of timing, manufacturing, and all that goes along with that process?
I don't believe that the partnership itself is to be blamed in this, and most definitely, that is not to be blamed for the blood clot. These are independent issues, and I think when it comes to the blood clots too, it also happens extremely rarely. Like we're talking about less than 1 in a million. The chances that blood clot of a different kind, but in any case, that would emerge from a painkiller, like a regular painkiller over the counter, the pill, flying, taking an airplane, smoking. Like these are all things that, increase in some percentage your risk of blood clots. So they're two separate issues. And I think, it's sort of because J&J got caught into like two hiccups, one after the other, it's easy to conflate them.
Do you think that, of course, there's been a lot of bad publicity around J&J and the vaccine, and is it trustworthy and all this sort of thing? And a lot of those have been dealt with by risk-benefit analysis and that sort of thing, saying that, yes, the vaccine is relative to the risk safe. But do you think that this is this sort of reporting, the bad press, the media storm that's been built up around it, it's going to be hard for J&J to shake that off?
Don't think so, personally. I think, and I also don't know that. I also don't know that it was necessarily bad press per se. I think it's a difficult and tricky thing to do because. So what happened is, rare cases of this blood clot disease emerged. It's less than 1 in a million, but it is a drug it's been used in an emergency context. And so it's pretty standard to interrupt it and make sure that we understand what's going on, at the very least to understand, for instance, who's predisposed. We've seen that women, are more predisposed to it. And again, like predisposed to something that may happen less than 1 in a million times. So like cases, so very, very remote chance. And so it's hard to report that. And this is something that happens with all new medications. But because all eyes are on it right now, it's very hard to report it without, raising alarm. Because that's what everybody's looking at. And again, the other thing is that we're talking, the J&J vaccine for the moment has been, administered in the U.S. where there's, quote unquote choices. So people have other vaccines, but in most of the world, that's not the case. And there's many countries where, getting Pfizer or Moderna wouldn't be possible because of the technology exactly. That's available, for cold storage. So, I don't think that people would opt out necessarily of having a life-saving vaccine.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Annalisa Morelli is a healthcare reporter for Quartz, and we're talking about the vaccine wars, which have been underway. You know, when I think back on how much has changed and how much has changed for these individual companies, you know, you look at Moderna. It looked like it was a failed startup before the pandemic, and now, Annalisa, it's one of the biggest brands in the world. How critical do you see the vaccine race to Moderna's business fortunes?
Oh, fundamental. I doubt that most of Americans or people in the world really would have heard of Moderna before they started working on the COVID-19 vaccine, and now it's a common name that everybody knows what is doing and what is working on. I think even beyond that, mRNA is something that people are now somewhat familiar with. And again, it was a pretty obscure technology, prior to the COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about sort of pulling out the telescope a little bit, how do you see all this attention affecting the value of these companies that we've been talking about?
The brand recognition, the investment, the possibility of further research in mRNA is going to be enormous. But I think also, this will be an important moment because the potentials and the possibilities of mRNA technology are really, really huge. And they go far beyond, creating vaccines, speedily and the kind of applications that we've seen in the past year. And having, it's almost like we got, through the development of this vaccine, a boost of confidence in this new technology that could potentially change the way we treat a lot of diseases.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, too. It reminds me, in fact, of when, say, the last World War happened, World War II, I'm talking about a fighting war. We had the development of all sorts of technologies that we didn't know about or couldn't really fully conceive of, at least in the popular imagination, that emerged at the end of the war as a result of all of the research and development and manufacturing that took place during the conflict. In a sense, it's almost as if one of the major side benefits of this war against COVID-19 is that we now will have a whole range of medical tools. Perhaps we might not have come across as quickly were it not for the sort of collaboration and intensity over these vaccines.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think just like this is a reminder of also just how much we can do as a humanity when we collaborate on something, and like how quickly we can come up with solutions, and how much, in many ways, science is faster, than politics or international cooperation when it comes to finding solutions to things. A lot of scientists, I remember speaking to researchers last year, discussing the fact that it would, they would want that going forward.
That is a fascinating observation for sure. Speaking of, there may be a need for continued collaboration given how we've seen COVID variants pop up all across the world. Are these companies, how well positioned are they to manufacture, help out with dealing with additional shots? Pfizer and Moderna both recently announcing their vaccines are going to need an additional booster shot within a year of the second dose, right? So are they, what sort of position are they in to meet that demand?
That's a great question. It seems as if they are able to meet that demand. Obviously, the initial lift will be, this year and the next in some countries, where you'll need to get everyone the first two doses or the first dose, so sort of like get the immunity going and kind of stopping the pandemic. But then they'll probably continue to produce that. And it seems that the capacity will be there.
Speaking of what's happening in other countries, I want to shift gears here because I know we have a lot of listeners in India, and India is one of the largest manufacturers and exporters of vaccines in the world, but they're also struggling to distribute doses of COVID-19 vaccine locally while its population is struggling with this horrific surge in COVID cases. Now, I know you've been reporting on how hospitals in India can't even get basic emergency supplies like oxygen right now, right? What are some ways pharmaceutical companies can push for easier vaccine access in these countries? Does that seem to be the core of it right now? That the healthcare system there isn't always able to reach people in, say, more rural parts, or perhaps the healthcare system isn't quite as stable as it needs to be to deal with an issue like a pandemic?
Well, there's many, many elements at play right now in India. I think, definitely there is in some parts of the country, and particularly in rural areas or out of, big cities, there's an issue of just the sheer quality of healthcare. You don't have the same kind of technologies and, ICU's capacities that you would have in some Western countries. So there's definitely that. And then, when it comes to the vaccines, it's the biggest producer of vaccines in the world. But then, a large part of the vaccines that it has produced are part of the COVAX, agreement. And so they have been sent, they have been produced to be sent out to other countries. And then some of the vaccines that have been developed in Western countries cannot be produced there because of patents. And so that's one thing that pharmaceutical companies can do. And by the way, there's a humanitarian angle to it. People should have equitable access to vaccine. But there's also a selfish argument. If we don't stop the outbreaks that, to the scale that we see in India, the likelihood of new variants emerging that, are vaccine resistant go higher. And then eventually the virus gets back to us too.
The question of access was an important one here in the United States. And now, as of today, everyone over 16 is eligible to get a vaccination here in the U.S., and nearly half of the population has already received their first dose. But I understand polling data from the Kaiser Family Foundation suggests those numbers could actually start to trend down in the next few weeks. Are we at a tipping point where supply could outweigh demand? And what's that going to mean for these companies' mass production?
Well, I think it will be a little longer before supplies outweighs demand. But again, as we were saying earlier, the U.S. is far ahead most of the world when it comes to the percentage of population that's been vaccinated. And so, there's going to be need elsewhere. And, just of today, you've heard, Biden has announced that he's donating 60 million AstraZeneca doses after they're approved to the U.S. To other countries, because there's, you know, there's an excess. And I think, you know, there will be a case for diverting these doses that have been bought and that have been produced to, you know, to other countries that need them. And, you know, the sort of like global supply can certainly use more than what it has right now. It's not been distributed equally across the world.
Of course, this is an ongoing story, and you can read more of Annalisa Morelli's reporting over at QZ.com. That's Quartz, of course. Annalisa, thanks so much for sharing with us your expertise and your insights. It's been great to have you on Business Wars.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. On our next episode, we're going to be returning to the wild and woolly world of pro wrestling. Talk about a gear shifter. We're going to be looking at a special edition of our WWF versus WCW season featuring enhanced audio and a brand new interview from Wondery. You've been listening to Episode 7 of Vaccine Wars for Business Wars. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. You'll also find some links and offers from our sponsors in the episode notes. Supporting them helps us keep offering our shows for free. You know, there's another way you can support the show, and that's by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey. And tell us which business stories you'd like to hear. I'm your host, David Brown. Puffs Up Fathima produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.